Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
This is a More Than Just Podcast production.
Welcome to this podcast, Season 6, Episode 45. My name is Tim Mitra. I am in Toronto, Ontario, and I'm joined by Jonathan Kuhlein in Mississauga, Ontario.
Hello there, kids.
I'm also joined by Jaime Lopez Jr. in Seattle, Washington.
How's it going?
And yeah, it's going pretty good. So we're just talking about the fact check before the show started here. The fact check was amazing. We don't have any fact check this week because I forgot to edit the show. So whoops. Yeah. So and Jaime has. So last week we were down to like two hosts, which in the order of things, you will hear that episode before this one, even though I haven't edited it yet. But Jaime pointed out that we have 50% more hosts this week. So. Right.
Well, it's good to be back and nice to know that I was missed so much that we missed an episode.
Yeah, we completely forgot about you and the episode. Anyway, we were just saying how efficient and short it was. So it was so short, we forgot to follow up on it. Yeah, I was looking at the feed and the last episode was not easing me brain. So, oh, well, so more fact check next week, 50% more fact check next, or is it 100%? How does that work? Jaime, was the math work on that?
You know, the math gets weird because if we didn't have any this past time and then we get even just one, I think it's infinite rate of change.
Mm-hmm. Infinite fact check.
Infinite percentage more, I think.
So next week will be the fact check show? Is that what you're saying?
There'll be a significant drop. We'll go from infinite rate of change to like two, you know, it'll average out to like half.
Oh, we know we did great. We know we did great. It was so good that we had the episode inserted into people's brains. That good. We didn't have to bother publishing it.
There you go.
So I'm going to have a quick search here for Discovery just to see where we are. Disco Discovery. Here we go. So where are we? We are talking this week about season 5.
Episode 9.
Oh, so it's like we're at the...
This is the penultimate episode of Star Trek Discovery.
Star Trek Discovery, yes. That's true. And it is, in fact, that very same thing that he just said. Penultimate. Alrighty, well, let's move into the headlines, and Jonathan's up first.
Yeah, I thought I'd get us kicked off with a little Star Trek news, and not a little Star Trek news. So we have known for a little while they're going to do this Starfleet Academy spin-off show from Discovery. We hadn't really gotten a lot of sort of clues on who is going to be in it. And then just out of nowhere this week, we got the news that the lead for the show is an Oscar winner. Holly Hunter is going to be the star of Starfleet Academy. And that's some pretty big news. She doesn't work a ton. She's an incredible performer. I love her in some of the things I've seen her in over the years. And it was just really caught me off guard, and I think caught a lot of people off guard that, all of a sudden we've got this A-list, Oscar winning performer who's going to be the captain and chancellor of the Academy, presiding over both the faculty and a new class of Starfleet cadets as they learn to navigate the galaxy in the 32nd century. So, yeah, that's pretty huge and exciting. And of course, it's filming here. They're going to be filming here as they have for a lot of the Star Trek shows, with the exception of Picard. What do you guys think of Holly Hunter as your star?
A couple of things. So isn't Mary Wiseman, isn't she involved in that show?
Well, it would make sense if she was. Hmm. Bec- because obviously on the Discovery show, she left Discovery and was off the show for a little while she was supposed to have been working at the Starfleet Academy. This season, she's come back to Disco because she's helping them work on this big mission. But they have not explicitly said she's going to be in the show that I know of. I think we kind of all assumed it, but I don't know if for sure she's going to be there. Either way, I mean, it's quite possible that Mary will be the sort of heart of the show as she has been for Discovery, right? But she may well be the heart of the show while Holly Hunter is the star of the show.
Yeah, so can we talk about Holly Hunter's Oscar for a second here? Because, yeah. If I'm not mistaken, she didn't say a word in that piano.
In the piano, while she plays somebody who's mute, right?
Yeah, yeah. Interesting, especially since she's got a very distinctive voice, right?
Yeah. She does.
I've never watched that movie. I don't know if you've ever seen it, but
I have not seen all of the piano. I've seen some of the piano, but she is in one of my favorite movies, which is Broadcast News.
I didn't know you were going to say that.
Oh my god, that movie is so funny, so mm-hmm. well done. It's for those of you who don't know, it's a 1987 movie, so you're forgiven if you're too young to have remembered it or not seen it. But she plays this TV producer on a news show, and she's kind of in a love triangle with William Hurt and Albert Brooks, and they're just two completely different guys. One guy is really handsome and really stupid. The other guy is really, really smart and not as handsome. And she's sort of in this love triangle. It's about their life there and behind the scenes of the TV station. Anyway, she's fantastic. She got nominated for an Oscar for that too. That is a terrific, terrific movie. I highly recommend that one. But yeah, I mean, she's been in just a ton of stuff over the years, and from TV shows and everything else. But she's, as I say, she's been a little selective. She hasn't just done everything. Where most people will actually know her from, her probably most famous role, which is hilarious, is, in spite of the fact that she won an Oscar for other things, is she's Mrs. Incredible in The Incredibles.
Elastigirl, yeah. Yeah,
yeah, she's Elastigirl. So, that is it's funny. I mean, you think about Raising Arizona and Broadcast News and The Piano and all these great things, but it's probably The Incredibles that she's been exposed to most people for.
Well, she mostly recently too, also in Succession, which obviously you two haven't seen her in there, but yeah, if you had been watching, I think season 3 of Succession, she shows up in there as a lawyer. No, season 2, it looks like. Yeah. Lawyer? Mm-hmm. PR CEO. I think she was a CEO for a minute in that show.
Yeah, with the Pierces. I've seen the show.
You've seen Succession?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you have. Okay, right.
Yeah,
I put it on while you were vacuuming and there was no Paw Patrol to watch. Is that what happened?
There's only so many of those that they can, put out in any given year. It's all about quality with that series.
Yeah, that's true. All right. So Jaime, you have something for us too, which is, I thought, weird, but okay.
Yeah. I don't understand. And it'll get, into some more of this when we go through some of the Apple TV stuff. But Apple has just weirdly just found this lane that says they're just going to make all sorts of science fiction and fantasy type material, including things this claims to be an adaptation. I don't know if it's reboot. I don't know if it's a remake. I don't know if it's continuation of the 1981 Terry Gilliam film Time Bandits. Mm-hmm. This one is starring Lisa Kudrow as presumably Lisa Kudrow herself, because they don't give a character name in the description. But Time Bandits, anybody remember this movie from
it's one of my favorite movies.
I was going to say, Tim and I remember it very much. So it's, Terry Gilliam, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a must watch, I think, for most people I know, most kids I know too, right? So to introduce them to wormholes and supreme beings and
black humor.
Black humor and Ian Holm and
So this one is not a movie. It is a 10 episode series. For folks who don't know, Time Bandits fit that sort of same slot of on the VHS tapes was probably Willow and Time Bandit and maybe the Neverending Story if it fit.
Yeah.
I think I saw it. Didn't I see Time Bandits in the theater recently? I think I went and saw it in the theater on a special playing of it, right? One of the most, my most coveted DVDs or Blu-rays or whatever,
This, the thing that I thought was really interesting, Jaime, was who's behind it. who's producing this?
Who?
It's Jemaine Clement is serving as a showrunner with Ian Morris, and Taika Waititi is on board as a co-creator and executive producer. So essentially, this is the same group that have just wrapped up What We Do in the Shadows, which is a hilarious and really, really fun show. So yeah, I mean, this checks a lot of boxes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, look at that. It's in my Apple TV purchased movies catalog. Yep. Cool. So let's see how they ruin this one. That could ruin the moon landing for me. Let's see how they ruin this one.
Yeah, this, I don't know if you guys saw the story last week, and I don't want to get too far off track, but there was a story last week about one of the people involved in this show has filed charges because there was a she claims that she was physically and mentally abused on the set.
Really?
This is Charlene Yee, who goes by they, them. They said that, they were physically assaulted by a scene partner and coerced into quitting partway through. And so there's I'll throw the link into that came out last week. It was funny because that was the first time I heard about the Time Bandits show. And I was like, wait, they're doing a Time Bandits show. And what happened? So you can read that that if you are curious about the details there. But obviously, hopefully we'll not take the bloom off of something we're excited to see.
Mm-hmm. A little 30-second sidetrack here. So I don't understand what the heck is going on in Hollywood. They need to clean up their mess because X-Men 97, right before it premiered, is like, hey, we're getting rid of the showrunner for similar-ish type stuff that you just described. Like it's just bananas that, and maybe I'm taking it the wrong way. Maybe it's more like this stuff continues to happen, but now it's actually coming out earlier and sooner rather than people just sort of letting it be a thing that is known but not stated explicitly out in the industry.
I think maybe you're on the right track. I really do.
This is a progress state here is what you're thinking.
Yeah, I think this isn't that it's happening more. I think this people are quicker to pull the trigger when this stuff is happening than they would have in the past. They would have been like, no, I can't complain. I'll have problems with my career. This person's very powerful. Now I think there's been some progress made, not nearly enough, but there's been some progress made. And I think people are much more ready to say, I don't need to be treated like this just because I work in this environment. And that's good. That's good. I mean, obviously if Charlene Yee is, you know, if her accusations are proven true, then she absolutely deserves to be, recognized, compensated, and the person in charge should be subsequently disciplined for it.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Or not cool. Sorry. Oh, look, it's me. So I was just whipping around the threads last week and found this, this post here that there's a QR code that appears in the Deadpool trailer where when Wolverine's walking by and strutting by is apparently, but if you scan it, it takes you to this this video clip of Ryan Reynolds reading a promotional video or promotional script for the movie. So there's a link here in the show notes so you can go and watch that that very same clip. So I just thought it was kind of cool.
And tickets are now on sale.
Are they?
Yep, that was what this sort of promotional bit was. They put a little teaser out earlier this week on Monday when the tickets went on sale, and then they put out that one you described, Tim. It was a QR code for maybe a day or a day and a half, and then everybody found it, and then now they've just put that one out on social media as well, basically telling everybody to go buy their tickets, even though the movie doesn't come out for another 2 months.
Wow, okay. Is it playing in IMAX?
Yes.
Cool.
So when you eventually listen to last week's episode, you'll hear Jaime and Tim talk about...
No, of course you've listened to it by the time you hear this one.
Three Body Problem and the fact that it got a renewal, but it kind of got a weirdly worded renewal when they first announced it. They were sort of saying, they were going to... The Netflix basically said, we're going to have additional episodes to, quote, finish the story. But they didn't really say what that meant. We didn't know if that meant one season. We didn't know if that meant a handful of episodes. David Benioff and Dan Weiss and Alexander Wu, who are running the show, had said, and I heard an interview with them a few months ago where they said, you know, yeah, we think it's at least 3 or 4 seasons to finish the entire trilogy of books as a show. And so it was kind of a little in limbo. People were very worried about the wording of that announcement. And this week we got a little clarity, thank goodness, from them, who they were speaking to The Hollywood Reporter and said, you know, we know how many hours this is going to take, and we know this is going to take seasons, plural. So it sounds like what they've gotten from Netflix is a commitment to do more seasons of this to wrap up the trilogy, which is great news, because I think for those of us that enjoyed the first season, you don't want to see them, you know, trying to jam 2 more books worth plus the stuff they left out of the first book into, you know, 8 more episodes or whatever it is. You want them to have at least what, you know, what they think they need to tell the story right. So hopefully that can let everybody breathe a little easy. I don't imagine, given the scope of the series, and given that the subsequent seasons are much more sort of sci-fi intense, I think it's probably going to be at least a couple of years before we see seasons 2, and then another couple of years beyond that, season 3. So, but good news.
So some live follow-up. Deadpool is available in 3D, IMAX, and IMAX. So it's kind of like, if you want to see it, they should have like an afternoon showing in 3D, and then they have evening showings in not 3D in IMAX. So whatever. Yeah. And I recently discovered, I went and saw part of my watch list today, will be talking about a movie I saw in IMAX. I went to the IMAX at Young Dundas, and it's the worst IMAX theater that I know of, because the screen's big, but you sit way too far away from it, so that like it might as well just be, you know, like a regular size, regular movie. Like, I don't know why you pay extra money for this particular theater. I saw like Raiders of the Lost Ark there from like the second or last row, and it was like looking at a postage stamp. Anyway, just I digress. But yeah, definitely. But just, you know, if you're interested in Deadpool, check out, tickets are on sale, and yeah, they're already like, forget first day, because a lot of the regular seating shows seem to be sold out, except for in Mississauga. But oh no, I just leaked that they're available in Mississauga.
Shh,
but
don't ruin it for us out here.
Anyway,
so when you buy the tickets now, in
a few days anyway, right?
By the time the episode comes out, you will already have your tickets.
There you go. Good thing we're not really live.
Yeah, it's not a live stream, so that's totally fine.
Okay.
Anyway. Next up, we got another trailer drop today, and a fun and funny one. We got our first real trailer for Beetlejuice, the sequel to
Beetlejuice. Wait a minute. You can't say it. You just said it 3 times.
I did, but you know, maybe those interstitial words will save me from the demonic presence.
All right.
So we had gotten a teaser trailer. The teaser trailer didn't really have much dialogue or anything, and it just sort of showed you a few sort of scenes. This one, definitely a lot more Michael Keaton back reprising his role, Winona Ryder, and, you know, Jenna Ortega as playing her daughter. And, you know, we definitely get
Catherine
a little
O'Hara.
Bit. Yeah, Catherine O'Hara. So we definitely get back into that world. And
William Dafoe.
Yeah, we even got a few Monica Bellucci and Willem Dafoe. Yeah. And yeah, it's kind of neat to see a little bit of extra stuff mixed in there, but it looks fun. And I mean, I was a fan of the movie back when it first came out. You know, my wife and I are both big fans of that movie, and I think we were both of the mind that, like, what took you so long? Like, I get you wanted to do, there was rumors for a long time that they were going to do a sequel. You know, this movie came out, you know, 30 plus years ago. It seemed like it was ripe for sequels, just because, you know, Michael Keaton was so great in it. And it was really fun to see him, you know, wearing the makeup, making the funny quirky remarks, and just being a handful of a demon. And I'm excited. I want to see this. Any thoughts? Yeah,
and only thing is missing is Gina Davis and Alec Baldwin. Thin Alec Baldwin, that is.
Yeah, I don't know. Who knows? Maybe there's a cameo, or who knows what. They haven't, you know, they obviously haven't spoilers. The only thing that they really confirmed in this trailer is they did kill off the dad, which does make sense, because that actor, it was found to have been, he was convicted of some crimes involving photographs of children and stuff. That's Jeffrey Jones, who was the dad in Beetlejuice. He was the principal in Ferris Bueller's Day Off and played a whole bunch of parts in the 80s and 90s. Quite a while ago, he was charged and found guilty of having pictures of children on his computer. So
bad. Mm-hmm.
So justifiably, they have killed off that character. And
okay.
Cool. Hi, May. Are you a Beetlejuice fan? Was that before your time? Or
I'm definitely in my wheelhouse, and that's why in this multimedia experience we have here on Spotcast in our Slack group, I said, hey, it's time, just like X-Men 97 continued for the animated series, they need a Beetlejuice 92, because I looked it up and the series ended in 91 for the animated series.
I was well into my teens when that came on, the Beetlejuice cartoon series, but I must admit I watched it a handful of times and thought it was quite delightful. And actually a number of years ago, I found a copy of the companion comic book that came out at the time. I found a copy of number one and squirreled that away into my collection. So hopefully the revival of Beetlejuice will drive the demand around that one. But I like where you're going with this, Jaime. I think we should just pick things up where we left them off, and we don't have to remake them. Just start where you left off. Just keep going.
In the case of Beetlejuice, it'll be extra confusing because in the movie, Beetlejuice is definitely an antagonist, right? He's maybe not the main villain per se, but he's definitely a big antagonist and not liked by the Lydia character. But in the animated series, they're like best buds, and the family is totally cool with the hanging out with Beetlejuice. It's very, very different. It's like loosely inspired and not really, I think, in the same canonical universe as the movie, as far as I can tell. It'd be really hard to reconcile.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's sort of a, comedy thriller kind of idea, right?
Yeah, I think it falls right into that black comedy kind of thing where, it's the humor is kind of a little morose and a little dark, but... But also, there are times when that movie's got some genuine creepy stuff to going on in there too.
Right. Yeah. 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 I think your mileage will vary. And it's from the mind of Tim Burton, right? Mm-hmm. So, there you go. Cool. All right. So I'm going to talk about my next two stories in reverse order. So just a quick thing here. I read an article this afternoon where we've talked about Tig Notaro playing Jet Reno a few times and how she's kind of one of the delights of Discovery in the last three or four seasons. So this is an article where she's interviewed about her sort of role and her portrayal in the series. And there's some spoilers in here if you haven't. Well, if you got to this point in the podcast, you've probably seen the episodes she's been in. But it's interesting to hear her sort of take on it and how she got into the role and how she's ended up, being more of a recurring character over time, right? And she was even surprised by Aragas. She was surprised to find out her own backstory as a character, right? Because she kind of wondered about that too.
Yeah.
So check it out. Link in the show notes here for that particular story. But do you want to play a game? I stumbled across another, clickbaity kind of article today on Star Trek, and I just thought, since we're a Star Trek podcast, and I put you two guys, on the spot here, because I mean, you've probably watched more episodes of The Next Generation and Deep Space Nine and Voyager than I have, or at least you've watched them more times than I have. Can you, of the, I'm doing air quotes, 75 famous people who have guest starred on Star Trek, how many can you name?
Like off the top of our heads or with like?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Boy.
We had Kirkwood Smith a couple of weeks ago. We mentioned.
Yeah. Kirkwood Smith. Right? David Ogden Stiers was a guest at one point. I don't know that one.
Yeah.
Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
A huge UPN advertisement.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yep. Yep.
Yeah. Any rock stars you can think of?
Any rock stars?
I see his face. He was Vorta. What was his name?
Is it Iggy Pop?
Iggy Pop, yeah.
Christian Slater was one at one point.
Yeah, he was in one of the movies.
Yeah. Woof.
Sarah Silverman.
Sarah Silverman was in a Voyager two-parter. That's right.
Yeah. And who was the one that Picard was not supposed to fall in love with, but did?
Oh, Joan Collins?
No,
that was McCoy.
That's McCoy.
That's McCoy, right, yeah.
Oh, that's true. That's a good one. Famke Johnson,
that's right. Yeah, from the X-Men. Yeah. And James Bond. Ashley Judd was in the Game episode with Wesley.
Yep. Any Seinfeld people?
Oh, Jason Alexander's been in Star Trek.
That's right. Yep. He was in the Think Tank episode.
Yep.
Back to the Future, that should be an easy one.
Well, Chris Lloyd, yeah.
And Frasier?
Oh, yeah. Well, of course, Kelsey was the captain in the time travel, the one where they crash into the ship that comes through the time warp and stuff. Yeah.
Yep. And his wife, Lilith?
Yeah, I can't remember what the context was, but I do remember her. She was a doctor or something, wasn't she?
Mm-hmm. How about Savick?
Oh, Kirstie Alley, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
And what about in Undiscovered Country?
Chris Plummer.
Yeah, of course.
Our man, the myth, the legend, Chris Plummer.
And the Vulcan?
Vulcan.
Kim Cattrall.
Oh, yeah, Kim Cattrall, of course.
Canada's own,
that's right.
What about playing poker with Data?
Oh, yeah. Stephen Hawking.
Stephen Hawking. Mm-hmm.
As himself.
Yeah, yeah.
What about what was that one with the guy who played the captain on Enterprise?
Oh, Scott Bakula?
Yeah, who else was in the show? Not the same. Oh, it was an episode.
Oh, what's his name? Dean Stockwell?
Stockwell, yeah.
I would like to say, for the record, I'm not looking these up. I'm literally just going off the top of my noggin here. Well,
Tim's hints are the thing that are helping me, because I'm like, man, I, off the top of my head, I've gotten very few.
All right. I was just curious if you could name a few of them.
Well, we're doing okay. We're doing okay.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Does Kate Mulgrew count, given that she was Mrs. Columbo? Like, how far did they go in the criteria here?
Well, they even went to the animated series, you know, with Ted Knight and who played Shinzon on Star Trek Nemesis.
Yeah, like Tom Hardy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And, of course, Frank Gorshin, you know, the Riddler.
Yeah, with the two-faced guy, yeah.
Yeah, and Ron Perlman, because he's been in every movie, every show ever.
Yeah, well, Ron was like Doug Jones before Doug Jones was Doug Jones. He used to do a lot of character makeup stuff.
And David Warner's been in a couple of things. He was in... He played the Chancellor in the I think it was Romulan Chancellor Klingon Chancellor in Undiscovered Country, and he also was the There Are Four Lights.
Yeah, the Kardashian, yeah.
Yeah. And of course Whoopi Goldberg, she kind of a throwaway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, there's been so many. I mean,
how about Kirk's dad in the redos?
Well, yeah, that's Chris Hemsworth.
Yeah. And, so you guys are doing okay.
Yeah, I mean, there's been so many, right? Like, it depends on what you call a guest star versus a star versus a, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, lots of, I mean, again, you can't have a show that's been around for 55 years and not have a lot of famous parts played by, you know, again, even Ashley Judd, when she was on the show, she wasn't really that big a deal. Yeah. And then she went on to become a much, you know, bigger A-list.
Well, she was Hollywood. A country star at that point, but, oh no, she was a daughter of a country star.
Yeah, it was, Winona and
the Judds.
The Judds. But there's definitely a lot of people who have had a moment there. As you say, even Sarah Silverman, she wasn't really a thing at that point. She was kind of a young comic and had a little two-episode arc.
How about Starsky and Hutch?
Ooh.
This is a real deep cut.
Yeah, I must admit, the Starsky and Hutch was before my time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, David Soul. He was one of the people in one of the early, in the first Star Trek, The Apple. What about the...
Yeah.
And Sally Kellerman, of course, Hot Lips from MASH.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And of course, Clint Howard. Come on.
It's true. Clint's been in everything.
He's been in twice. And then, you know, Luther himself, Idris Elba.
Yeah.
And who played Harry Mudd?
Oh, from the Office. What's that gentleman's name?
Rainn Wilson.
Rainn, that's right. Rainn.
And you know who they've got here as a famous star?
I don't know.
Rekha Sharma.
Really? I mean, I love Rika, but...
Because she was in Battlestar Galactica before she played Laundry.
True. I mean, Star Trek VI, Iman was the shapeshifter. Iman was a very famous, one of the first supermodels.
You know what? They don't have Iman on this list.
I mean, it's Bowie's wife, and she was David Bowie's wife and one of the most famous supermodels in the world for like 20 years, so...
Yeah.
Probably deserves it.
Cool. All right. Well, we played the game.
How do we do? Do we pass? Can we keep doing a Star Trek podcast?
Yeah, I don't know if you do. If we had one of those Facebook contesting, I don't know how well you guys would have done. But anyway, we've now reached the main part of the show where we talk about something Star Trek related. And this time we're talking about Season 5, Episode 9, the penultimate episode, Lagrange Point.
Mm-hmm.
Is this where we cue ZZ Top or what?
It was a weird thing to call the episode. I mean, I get that it's kind of, I get what they're going for. The Lagrange point is that point of stability between two gravitational points in mm-hmm. space. So two wormhole or two black holes, for example. I'm not sure that was the best title for this episode, but whatever.
Mm. Okay. So should we do our elevator pitches?
Hell yeah.
All right, what do you got?
I think you hinted at mine, Tim, because it was basically catnip for me. I went with the damaged USS Discovery is just a bit too late to arrive at the shack outside Lagrange, so they must steal the progenitor's tech from the Breen. But will they discover that it's just a bit too tight? And that was about as close as I could get with my cuts.
All right. Tim, you want to sing this one with me?
No. Oh, no, you go ahead.
Black holes to the left of me, Breen warship to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
All right. You want to hear mine?
Yes.
Aren't you a little short for a Breen trooper?
Yep.
So, I mean, the one thing I noticed was as soon as these guys put on their uniforms, you know, you got Book in the middle and you got Burnham on this one side. You got, you know, Blue on the other one. And you got this other guy. I can't remember his name. You got four of them dressed as Breen. And it's like they couldn't be more unmatched in terms of height. And yet every single Breen soldier on the ship so far could be played by the same person.
Yeah.
Because they're all uniformly tall, right?
Well, and it's mm-hmm. it's strange, too. It did occur to me, although your point is a really great one. It did occur to me that, like, so Breen are supposed to be, like, a gaseous or liquid life form, right? That's sort of how we establish, you know, in the past, and we've seen in this season. Why do their uniforms need to be different sizes? Is it like if you are a larger ball of gas, do you need a bigger uniform? Like, I'm not sure I understand.
That's what I'm saying, though. But on of all the Breens that I've seen on the ship so far, right? Haven't they all been the same size?
It looks like it. It really does.
Yeah. So, and I was thinking today about the guy who played the uncle. Like, who is that? And was it really the guy in the suit playing the uncle? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure it was, but yeah.
Yeah.
Because I heard, I saw an interview with Ryan Reynolds. He was interviewed by David Letterman on I think Netflix, right? You know, in My Next Guest Needs No Introduction mm-hmm. series. Mm-hmm. It is him in the Deadpool suit, yeah. You know, unless he's doing some major backflip thing, in which case it's some other guy. But, and he says he is doing all the lines and he has to go back and do the I forget what they call it, where he has
ADR.
To redo the lines.
Yeah.
Yeah, ADR, yeah. Yeah. But that is him in the suit, so.
Well, so he's not taking the full Mandalorian road on this one.
Yeah. Get another guy to play the role, yeah.
Yeah. I think, the whole infiltration of the Breen thing had a lot of holes in it. And one of them came up as one of my, like, maybe this is the question, but...
Before you get there, so this is the other, I'm always calling up the tropes, right? This is the trope where they impersonate another species by, you know, modifying themselves somehow get onto that ship and steal some technology. I mean, like, that goes right back to Kirk as, you know, dressing up as a Romulan and Spock going and seducing the female, you know, captain of the Romulan ship, right, to steal the cloaking device. And any number of other episodes where the triple episodes that they did where, you know, the Deep Space Nine crew dressed up as old-timey Star Trek people, right?
Yeah.
It infiltrated the Enterprise. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Anyway, sorry, John.
Oh, it's okay. I think this one definitely was a heist show. That was kind of the shtick. They wanted to do the heist. But there seemed like there's some big plot holes in this one. Like, you know, okay, so Discovery can cloak itself. Cool. The shuttles can cloak themselves. That's a new one. You know, they like, basically they're like, yeah, we're going to take a shuttle in. They never explain how that's going to work. Like, are we just supposed to assume that everyone has a cloak in the 32nd century now? Like, yeah. They did not make that clear at all. And the whole shtick in the older series was like, you couldn't transport when you were cloaked, but somehow they transport out when they're cloaked. So I got a little bit lost in what we've established as 32nd century technology canon.
Well, also dropping the shields to be able to fire. That's another thing too.
Right? Yeah. There's a lot of like, what the heck is in there?
And conveniently there's an exhaust port that they can, you know, take advantage of. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So whatevs.
Mm-hmm. Is what it is.
Yep. What did you guys have for your best pew pew pew?
I mean, the big one for me was the Discovery versus the Breen ship, and then sliding in and wrecking it from the inside as well.
Yep.
Yeah, it was so big that they could fly inside. That I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, although it's funny because I saw that part and then today I was looking at a few blogs and people had the same response. They were like, they went in there so that they could like pew 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 and dislodge the capsule and then try and get away with it and save the crew. While you're in there, maybe fire like everything you've got inside the Breen ship and maybe stop them completely. Like, is that off the table?
Well, isn't that like Independence Day and Phantom Menace? And like,
once you're in the hangar, it's Phantom Menace, right? That's what happens at the end of Phantom Menace. Little boy Anakin slides inside and is like, I can't figure out how to use this thing. And he fires a couple of torpedoes and destroys the master ship.
Yeah. 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 Same plot line. But, I mean, Phantom Menace stole it from Independence Day, but same idea.
I wish they would get these things a little straight, though. I must admit, I was a little ticked off during that fight, because in the last episode and in the previous two episodes, they have basically portrayed the Breen as the biggest Star Trek boogeyman of all time. Like, they have these massive ships with these impenetrable shields and these crazy amounts of weapons, and these things are just like, it's the Death Star, you know, but a different shape. And then in this episode, they drop the cloak and they basically take like a suicide run at this thing. And they're like, you know, running and gunning and they're fine. I'm like, those don't add up to me. That doesn't seem like the same thing. Like, they basically made it seem like if we, you know, go toe to toe with this thing, it's going to turn us into toast in like 4 seconds in the previous few episodes. And this one, they basically like collision course this thing and the Breen can't get it together enough to fire one of their incredibly powerful weapons to turn them into a space kebab. Like, come on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was the one sequence that like, it's kind of cool that there's like, okay, if we come at this like, you know, 35 degree angle, we'll be able to smash through their barrier and get on the inside without getting too bad. And to be fair, I don't think they would put a lot of guns inside of the ship for this sort of maneuver. So I'll give them a pass there. But I think that there was something missed by not having Discovery do Discovery things. It's not the same setup as when in the Mirror Universe for Deep Space Nine, where the Mirror Universe Defiant takes on the Negvar, the big Klingon ship, because it's like a much smaller ship and it just flies too close to be struck by capital ship weapons, right? I'm like, all right, that makes sense. Discovery is fairly large, even though it's considerably smaller than this Breen ship. And if they had done it kind of more like when Discovery was trying to penetrate through the cloak on season one of the sarcophagus ship, where they were jumping around like 100 times. You know, they didn't have to do that many, but I think a little jump, move to keep them from targeting you too easily would have been kind of helpful there.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like they could have done more sort of, I think you nailed the term perfectly too, Jaime, discovery things. Do some discovery things. Don't just go running and gunning. That's not a Federation thing. It's not a Starfleet thing. It's not a, I mean, and again, you're right. I think if this was the Defiant, where you were like, oh, it's the most heavily armored ship that's ever been created by the Starfleet. Okay, you get a little latitude there. But when you're like, last week, you're like, yeah, all they have to do is fire like one laser at us and we're toast. And then this week they're like, let's go rat them head first. Like, all right. When it came to Easter eggs, I got to be honest, I watched it and was really like sitting there with my pen in my hand and as it were, and I didn't get anything great. This episode was very singularly focused. Obviously, this is the penultimate episode. They were basically setting the stage for the finale. I think we're in store for one of the patented Jaime Lopez Hold My Beer finales. But yeah, it wasn't really robust with Easter eggs, was it?
No. And well, I mean, other, like I said, just the only one I would call it would be the trope I just mentioned, right?
But yeah. No, I mean, and they've been doing that all season. And you know,
the best of Star Trek.
Yeah, I mean, and that's good. But yeah, it didn't really, there wasn't like a, oh, they used an ancient piece of technology or whatever. It just felt like very like, okay, let's just put all the cuteness aside and get this done.
Yeah.
And this was, yeah. this episode was, you know, it had its moments, but it was really just all stage setting, right?
Yeah, for Easter egg, the closest I was able to get to, and that was sort of stretching it, was the xenoanthropology background for Michael as come up here. Yeah. And my big question, you already hit the nail on the head for me, is how would they wrap things up? And is this going to be another Hold My Beer moment?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, in a similar vein I had for my question was, you know, is everyone going to make it out? You know, is there going to be a noble sacrifice moment? I mean, they've kind of stage set like Saru might sacrifice himself. They kind of hinted at that a little bit this episode. But at the same time, they also have sort of hinted at, you know, oh, no, we're all going to get together and we're going to have a big wedding. And I'm like, Jesus, if they're going to try and wrap all this up and have a wedding in the next episode. Yeah. Like,
yeah.
Like, could you not? Or maybe give me two more episodes? Like,
or maybe the wedding will be in the movie. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And again, it's possible. I mean, in the same way that we've had characters in the past who've said, like, kill me off, I don't want to be in this anymore. Maybe Doug Jones in his 60s is like, please just kill Saru, because there's no way I'm putting this makeup back on and those shoes and everything else. Like, I'm done.
I don't know. I mean, but you're right. I mean, the thing about it is, does anybody have to survive? If this is the end of the end of the series, it doesn't really, all bets are off in terms of everybody walking out with, you know, unscathed, right?
It's true. I mean, I don't know.
It's not a Star Trek tradition, and you know.
Well, I mean, we talk about sometimes the short-lived and occasionally maligned Enterprise series, right? Killed off one of its fan favorite characters in the final episode, and a lot of people were like, "Hey, you know, you didn't have to do that on your way out the door," but then they felt like they did. They wanted to have some, you know, a moment in that episode that was actually significant. I don't know. I don't know how to feel about whether or not they're going to do something like that in the final episode of this. I don't know if it makes sense for somebody to sacrifice themselves, especially like they've been kind of nipping around the edges of this Book Burnham thing. You know, are they going to finally get their stuff straightened out? They've kind of had this Stamets, Hugh Culber, Adira thing, you know, you kind of hope that nothing happens to any of them. Cause again, God, please don't kill any more gay people. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see what they, in the end, how they approach that. If they think that it's more satisfying to have a character's arc end with, you know, a tragedy or something like that, who knows? The other question that I had that I did not write here, but it just has been nagging at me is, so the whole part of this episode is like time. We're really fighting against time. We got to get this thing back. You know, we're running out of time. And they said it like multiple times in this episode, like, oh, we're in a rush. We got to get this going. Oh, we're not going to have a lot of time to do this. And then in the midst of that, Burnham pulls Book aside while they're wearing Breen disguises in the Breen ship.
Hey, I wanted to have a chat with you.
To say, hey, I wanted to talk to you about my feelings. I was like, is it just possible that Burnham's terrible at her job? Is it just possible? Like, come on, man. You're the captain. Now, first of all, it's a long time, you know, loophole, plot hole problem in Star Trek that the captain goes on away missions. In reality, in the military, that's never going to happen, right? Like, if these are like space explorers slash military, you have a team that goes and does these things. The captain, it's not like, you know, right now they take the USS Indianapolis into the, you know, Gulf of Kuwait and are like, okay, now the captain's going to park the boat and then he's going to get off and he's going to lead this mission. Like, that's not a thing. So that's a big problem already. But beyond that, like, be professional. What the hell's going on? Like, how bad are you at your job?
It's kind of a, I mean, if you think about it from the point of view of the original series, right? Like the whole William Shatner, you know, banging everything that would, you know, that he can in that series, right? That's just the way TV was back then. Like, you know, stories were written that you had a male hero, you know, the good looking guy kind of thing. And he just makes out with everybody he can, right? That's,
yeah.
That was just sort of Gunsmoke and Bonanza, and it happened in every, you know, Mission Impossible, you know, any Gilligan's Island, even, I suppose. But I mean, well, not really Gilligan's Island, but like that was kind of a thing that just happened, even correct or incorrect or whatever. And it's kind of it's other than Picard, I guess. Well, not even Picard, but it's kind of like, you know, been consistently that, and they're trying to move away from that, I think, through different series. But yeah, this one here, like, does it have to be that Michael Burnham has a relationship with anybody?
Yeah.
Never mind, you know, anything that moves, right? Like it was with Kirk, right?
Yeah. Wow.
It's weird.
I don't know.
Anyway, I think it's just sort of like, it's a hangover from the original series.
Yeah. It struck me in it was even the episode that they did. I think it was maybe the third episode of this season, the one with Action Saru, where they go down to that planet and they're trying to find one of the clues, and it's just her and Saru, and the drones are chasing them around, stuff like that. And again, I get this is Star Trek. I get this is what they do, where it's like, you know, yeah, we had to beam outside this area, then we had to hike, and while we're on a hike, we'll have a conversation and we'll have a talk and blah blah blah. And I just kept thinking, like, I just cannot imagine two Navy SEALs being like, so what's up with you and that guy? And, you know, how's your relationship going with so-and-so? And it just felt very, I don't know. It feels like as much science fiction as, or fiction as science fiction sometimes.
Yeah.
But I digress.
Surely.
Gonna throw out some quotes because there was some really fun ones in this one, and unlike usual episodes, it wasn't just all Tig Notaro getting all the good quotes. Both Burnham and Adira said the line "science later, problem now." That was a good one. That went very well with Stamets's "math doesn't lie." I thought that was a good one. Burnham, nobody likes a disgusted Siom when she has to bawl out one of the Breen. Everyone always picks on the ensign from Adira when they're trying to figure out the easiest mark to get them to like get out of their way. That was mean and funny. Rainer and Tilly, if we were stuck in a foxhole, I wouldn't kill you. That is, unless you gave me more of that warm and fuzzy encouragement that I don't need. That was good. The Rainer Tilly.
The delivery was great too, because he kind of does it in segments, right?
I was already a fan. I know for a lot of our American friends that Callum Keith Rennie isn't exactly a household name, but he's been in a lot of Canadian sci-fi and a lot of Canadian television over the years. I've always enjoyed his performance, but I'll be honest, he's one of my favorite parts of this season. He's been really good. And then he gets the end one where he gets the here's the plate table setting for next week. The captain is in there. The progenitor's tech is in there. We're getting them both back. Failure is not an option. Let's do this.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, come on, man. Like, you wait your whole career to say a line like that.
Yeah.
I got goosebumps just saying it myself, and I'm just sitting here in my office.
Yeah. Well, he had the best line at the very end of it, where he just sort of, let's do this.
Let's do this. Yeah. Anytime you can get a let's do this, you know you're really making it to the big time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Honestly, do you guys think that they can land this with the amount of time and the amount of sort of stuff they have to tackle? Obviously, you know, Burnham and Maul are inside the artifact storage thing. We've got, you know, Locke is dead, but Maul's got him in the transport buffer. Thank you, Scotty, for teaching us all that works.
Yeah, the portable transport buffer.
Does anyone need to die in the future? Can we just get that out on the table too? Like, can't if I knew that I was, like, you know, about to die, I'd be like, transport buffer till they find a cure.
Yeah, right.
You know, they've got this sort of stage set. Obviously, Saru is going to intercept T'Hall. We've got, you know, the wedding still, you know, out there. It seems strange that they wouldn't have the wedding as the final scene of this show. Like, that seems like where you would land this is, we're all together. We made it. We fought off the bad guys. And now Saru and Tarina are getting married. Like, that seems like a logical ending.
I forgot about that too. You reminded me of that just now.
I mean, it's been a big part of the last couple seasons is the sort of Saru-Tarina relationship. And, you know, obviously, you know, there's a lot sort of built around
what I mean, though, is definitely on the checklist for next week. Like when, you know, Jaime puts together the checklist of things that they have to accomplish.
It would still be, it would be very weird if they ended this and we didn't get to see that actual culminating wedding versus just like, yeah, we're getting married someday, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. Jaime, do you think they can finish this in a satisfying way, or is this a tough task?
I feel like it's a really tough task, and it's probably going to have a Voyager-like ending where I think they can end this beef with Maul and the Progenitor's tech, but I can't see how they wrap up Discovery in this episode as well.
Yeah.
Unless it's like a 2 hour or at least an hour and a half final episode where they do something weird, you know, if you're strictly going for 1 hour, I don't know.
Yeah, that's what they did for us with Bad Batch, right? We were saying, like, how are they going to do this? And all of a sudden we had a double sized episode and we're like, oh, that's how they're going to do that.
Yeah.
And in the end, that ended up being not a perfect, but a pretty good ending.
Mm-hmm. Well, even the Next Generation was the same thing. They had a double ending, double episode, right?
They did. And that is, I still think, one of the high water marks as far as endings. That actually was a pretty good ending for a series.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
What I'm hoping for most of all, especially in the wake of the Captain Shaw, who I think we all really liked from the Picard series, getting kind of unceremoniously killed, I really hope they don't just kill Rayner because he was just a one season character. I really feel like I actually found myself this week thinking, oh, if they're going to spin off Starfleet Academy, I wonder if there's a way to have him and Tilly working together there, because that would be great, because their chemistry was really on display this week. Those two actors really kind of got a lot of good energy going back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it would be a cop out. I think it would be a cop out to kill the character you introduced most recently.
Right.
My only thought was, I wonder if Book sacrifices himself because this is the culmination of his redemption.
Well, he's the last of his species or whatever, right?
He is, but then they went out of their way when they went to that archive to show that he had gotten hold of those world roots, right? The ones that create the like living ecosystem of his planet. So yeah, it could just as that's easily
his Genesis device, right?
Well, that's it. It could just as easily be he dies and then Burnham goes and like plants those things and they call it, you know, new whatever his planet was called. I can't remember off the top of my head, but
Quajon.
Yeah. Maybe that's how you do that in a somewhat satisfying way. Although, I don't know, feels like he's kind of gotten out of the doghouse a little bit.
Yeah.
All right.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Synovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Synovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Did you guys talk about Doctor Who last week?
We did not talk about Doctor Who. We were waiting for you.
Oh, gentlemen, I appreciate that.
Yeah.
So we have three episodes.
Have we caught up on the four episodes, or everybody?
Yeah, well, the first one was Church at Ruby Road. That's the Christmas one, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, we didn't talk about that on the show, but what was weird about that was they dropped three episodes at the beginning, but if somebody hadn't seen any of the Christmas specials, you could start with that one, you know, like if you were just coming to Doctor Who new, you know, on Disney Plus.
Well, and I'm curious because I was trying to figure out, because I thought they had said that they were going to do an 8-episode season. And I thought, oh, is that with or without the Christmas episode?
But then
they've put it in there as episode 1 now. So theoretically, as of this week, we'll be at episode 5 of 8. This series is going to be over by like mid-June.
But I mean, like British TV seasons generally are pretty short, right?
It's true. So, it's true. It's just, it's funny.
Americans are catching up now after post-pandemic. Now we have 10 episodes, or since streaming, I guess, right? Because,
It's just funny, as you say, if they dropped essentially 3 episodes on the first week, and then another one last week, and another one this week, we're at 5 of 8 already. That's a pretty tight amount of time to have that much content.
Yeah, according to IMDb, there are only 4 more episodes left.
Yeah.
So on the 31st is Dot and Bubble, but yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I'm going to sort of give a little backstory to this one. So at Christmas time, I sat down and watched the Church at Ruby Road. And for some reason, my wife sat down with me because she noticed that Chudi Gatwa was the star, and we had watched Sex Education on Netflix, which he was one of the stars of, and she really liked him. So she thought, oh, I'll sit and watch this with you. And she watched that episode and she was like, this is actually really fun. Let me know when it comes back on. I'll watch with you. And I was like, okay, that's a first. She's not a huge sci-fi fan. She's a casual sci-fi fan. And Doctor Who is admittedly one of the weirder sci-fi shows out there. It's a little all over the place. It's a little campy, it's a little silly, and it's very, very wide ranging. So it's not for everybody, because one week they'll do a horror, and the next week they'll do a war, and the next week they'll do a musical, and the week after that they'll do time travel into the Old West, and then they'll go into, you know, ancient India, and, you know, so it's not for everybody. So she watched that one. And I said to her, oh, you know, hey, the new Doctor Who's back on. I need to watch all the episodes so I can talk about it on the podcast with the guys. And she said, oh, I'll sit down and watch with you. She watched the second episode, Space Babies. Mm-hmm. And she was like, I'm out.
Between that and what was the last one? Like Boom or Kaboom or something? It's kind of a rough start. That's like your first Who introduction.
Well, even the Devil's Chord's a little hard to take too, right?
I mean, I thought that was a good episode. It definitely, you know, I find Doctor Who is very much like a lot of other science fiction. It's only ever as good as its bad guys. The best Doctor Who seasons have had the best bad guy things, whether it's the Robot Men of the Daleks or the Master or, you know, whatever it is, the bad guy makes the season. And in this case, they're clearly building towards a bigger, bigger bad. The Maestro character that they introduced in the third episode was fun and interesting. And again, the way they had the musical notes and stuff, that was interesting.
He wasn't the best. Of all the Maestros, he wasn't the best. There have been better Maestros than him,
But, Space Babies, my wife was just like, what's happening? And I was like, Doctor Who kind of does this stuff sometimes where they kind of do these weird.
They give children little gummies and make them look like they're talking.
Doctor Who will do these kinds of weird, like, you know, cutesy talking aliens and babies and just weird stuff sometimes. And she was like,
"Were the ones that communicate with emojis,
cool,
right?
Cool. I'm out." So I said, you know, she said, you know, did you watch the other couple episodes? Because she didn't have time to watch them with me yet. And I wanted to catch up. And she's like, you know, how were they? I'm like, actually, I thought episode 3 was stronger than episode 2. And I thought that episode 4 was strong, but I don't think she'd like it because it's kind of slow and it's very sci-fi-y. And
okay, so hang on a second. So IMDb's got Church of Ruby Road listed as episode 0.
Okay, let me just double check
Disney Plus. I'm just telling you what I'm seeing here. So Space Babies is one, Devil's Court is two, Boom is three, and 73 Yards is the one. Oh, that's the one coming out tomorrow. Yes. Oh, I'm sorry. So there's that one. So there's basically five more episodes. So we've seen three. Yeah. So they're calling, IMDb's calling episode zero or Church at Ruby Rose zero, even though I know it's listed as number one on Disney Plus.
Yeah. Yeah. That's Disney Plus.
So we are getting the right number of episodes, new episodes.
Generally. So there'll actually be nine, including the Church at Ruby Road.
Yeah. Yeah. Correct.
Okay. All right. Well, that's better, I guess.
Yeah. I think it fits in. Like, when I saw the three episode premiere, I was like, wait a minute. Is this a recap? What's going on? Like, I've seen this one before.
And I thought about watching it too, going, wait a minute, I've seen this. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and I think I reconciled it by saying, oh, I remember Jonathan saying that with the, they now have Disney Plus money, and it's on Disney Plus from like the get-go, that this was sort of like Doctor Who, The Next Generation. Like, okay, yeah. If you didn't see any of the original stuff, that's okay. This is your new entry, person who has never seen Doctor Who before. This is your new entry to get in, and we're going to start it. And this is episode one, even though the fans of the show have already seen it and they're going to be confused. That's okay. Ignore them. You, the masses, this is episode one. Learn about this set of characters, and let's go from here.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's you're doing. Kind of learning it along with Ruby, because she's kind of new to this whole world as well.
Well, right? Exactly. So. And that's why it was good to have a new companion on this one. And you're right, Jaime, the beginning of Space Babies is just like, here's Doctor Who 101 for 10 minutes, where they're like, this is a TARDIS. This is what the TARDIS does. Here's how you control it. Here's bigger on the inside. Like, it just, they felt like they were doing the, oh, you just got to Doctor Who, here you go, kind of spoon feeding.
It's really weird to, like, you know, Space Babies, I could see being a really rough one, because when I... You know, Jodie Whittaker was my first Doctor, right? For people who are listening to this show, I was struck by how it can be this weird juxtaposition of Muppet Babies kind of like tone with like, this is straight up Aliens 2 kind of tone, yeah. Right? Like, yeah. And that is what happens with the bogeyman.
The bogeyman is the most disgusting thing Babies. I've seen in a while.
It's so bizarre to see a show. Like, so if you come in from this as like, oh, it's going to be like Star Trek, it's like, it's really not. Even when they go kind of, you know, Looney Tunes on some of the Star Trek episodes throughout the many decades, like they never really intentionally put this sort of thing together. So you just sort of have to get used to it, right? Like they're definitely going to like stab goblins and stuff that happened in one of the specials, I think, I was like, oh, it's totally okay to stab this giant goblin on a spire. Like, yeah, that's all right. Sure. Let's go with that. That's okay.
Yeah. Well, The Devil's Court, too, was like really well produced, but I've never seen a Star Trek episode that would be anything like that, right?
I mean, old Trek, like that's the thing, is it reminds me of like original
Trelane
Trek.
Trelane and things like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's true.
Because it was a little more campy and a little more, just a little more grounded, right? Like they were like, well, we can't just all do hard sci-fi. People will be like, what the heck's happening?
Well, this is related to the Toymaker, right? This is Spawn of the Toymaker, right?
Yeah. And then, yeah, the Boom, the latest episode that we've all watched, was kind of a weird one because it was, like, pretty dark, all things being equal, you know? It was like, well, you know, it's the military-industrial complex and the and the religion as you know, cause for battle and, you know, and then, like, the one guy gets died and turned into a piece of meat jerky and then the meat jerky starts talking and that was a lot of an episode.
And the abandoned tech, if it ends up being the abandoned tech that's left over, and nobody thought of the edge case where what happens if blah blah blah, right? And they never put that last one in. So I mean, because that's happened, I mean, like in a couple of, like in the Capaldi one, the one I mentioned earlier, where the robots that communicate with emojis.
Yeah.
Which was sort of like playing on where we are today with our phones and stuff, but and how we communicate with emojis these days, right? But it was an abandoned tech that's sort of taken over. And again, I mean, that is sort of a Star Trek trope, in that we talked about that a couple of weeks ago, with where the, you know, the Landru episode in the original series, and all these computers behind the big rock, you know, the big styrofoam rocks that, you know, you open it up and there's a computer panel in there of some type. And of course, they always know how to program them. But I mean, that's a very pretty common thing in Doctor Who. And Doctor Who's always sort of had it was always a BBC production, so it was never really high budget sci-fi. You know, it was sort of like sci-fi of the time.
Yeah.
I in terms of like plot endings, I really like how they ended Bill, you know, the companion Bill. You know, spoiler, I'm not going to spoil it for people who haven't seen that series with Capaldi, but because I thought that, you know, that was like an unexpected ending, and it doesn't really resolve itself, right? Because it that's how Bill ends up is how Bill ends up, right?
Yeah.
Sort of thing, right?
Yeah. I mean,
they've only actually killed off one companion in the history of Doctor Who, right? That was way back when.
Yeah. Well, they kind of killed a more recent one, but not really.
Yeah, I mean, the toy maker seemed to make it really clear, like, well, that's all right then. Is there like the pile of bodies that was implied to me, at the very least? Feels like more than one is my point. Fewer than 100, more than one.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
So we're liking it so far, yes? Your new Doctor Who's is this, do you see this? Like, see, the thing about it is, if you watch Doctor Who, no matter what actor plays as Doctor Who, you kind of end up believing that's Doctor Who.
Yeah. Right?
Mm-hmm. Like, in your mind, Jaime, could you see this as the same entity as Jodie Whittaker?
Yes. But it does take, like, this is the roughest part, the transition. I think by the end of the season, you'd be sort of just fully gelled into this. It didn't take me too long with Jodie Whittaker because I, you know, started with Jodie Whittaker. I was aware of other ones. And if pre-Jodie Whittaker, if you told me to do, like, draw Doctor Who, I definitely would have drawn David Tennant, right? That would have been my sort of, like, outsider's view of what Doctor Who was. But I think
you had three episodes with him too in the Christmas series.
Yeah, right? So it like helps solidify there, and I think that transition helps a bit. But seeing how this Doctor deals with things will be interesting. It's a very different sort of energy. I think that Jodie Whittaker's Doctor was more what's the right word I'm looking for? It's like she was enthusiastic, whereas this Doctor is really more. Impulsive is the right word. Energetic, maybe. It's like enthusiastic versus energetic. This dude is like all over the place, just like bam, 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 very quick paced. So that's a very different sort of thing that I noticed here.
This is like a Doctor Who for the ADHD generation. I agree, but I think that's the thing I like about him. And the same thing I liked about Jodie versus some of the Doctors before was I like the energy. I like the sort of frenetic sort of, I like that about Tennant. I like that about Jodie Whittaker. And I really like that about Chudi is they have this just sort of like, my mind is so full of experiences and ideas that it just sometimes just percolates through in words before I can even get my thoughts organized. And, you know, I start moving in different directions because I'm going to do a thing, but I can't remember which I should do first. And I like the energy that he brings to it. And I really like the chemistry that they've started off with him and Ruby. I think they actually are a really nice match.
She's sometimes a really good companion. I like her so far.
Yeah. Sometimes the companions can come off, even if they're, you know, they start off on an intelligent note, they just come off as a little daft because they're just like overwhelmed or they're very emotional. I mean, obviously we've had different characters in different states of mindset, but because she's supposed to be young and he's just like, I love seeing the world through other people's eyes. Come with me. Let's have an adventure. And she's like, that sounds awesome. Let's do that. Like, I don't know. It just has a really good energy so far. And you know, they're both just inarguably attractive and charming, and that makes for a lot. I was saying to my wife today, though, I find it interesting that the Doctor is so tied to the clothes. The Doctor has a look and a uniform, as it were.
Yep.
And so far we've had four episodes and four outfits, or five outfits for the Doctor. He changes in the third episode. It's interesting. It's not a bad thing, but it's unusual because you're used to the Doctor just kind of looking the same week to week, and maybe the companion changes their clothes. It's weird to have a Doctor who's like, it's gross to wear the same clothes all the time. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I kind of got the impression that whatever they wore in their first episode was sort of becomes their uniform. But
well, that generally is like they have a coat of some type, right?
Yeah, but I like that, you know, like when they're going back to 1960s London, they're like, let's go throw on some cool London 1960s clothes. And he like even throws on a hairpiece. Like, that's amazing.
Yeah, yeah, with the ribbon of fro. Yeah,
yeah, like that's great. And, you know, she gets those amazing white go-go boots. And like, I liked the... As you say, the energy of the whole thing, it just felt fresh and energetic and young. And I don't know. I was not huge on the Capaldi era. I was like, oh, good, another old man. So going from that to like a female doctor for the first time and exploring what that means now to going to a queer black doctor, although they haven't really, I mean, they've kind of over the years stressed that like, gender is just a non-concept for a Time Lord. Like, it doesn't matter the color of their skin, the whatever, but it matters to us. And so having a doctor who is queer and is black is not a small deal. That's awesome.
Yeah, and well, and the other thing about this particular series is it's Russell T. Davis and Stephen Moffat back again, right? They were the ones that did the whole David Tennant stuff, right?
They were the ones who rebooted it in 2004, right? These are the ones who, when they were like, let's bring it back from hibernation, they were the ones who sort of got it up off the ground. So, as you say, starting from scratch, this is the first time that Disney Plus, you know, some huge player. I mean, where did Doctor Who appear in North America before this? Well, it was on... In here, it was on the Sci-Fi Channel or Space. Before that, it was on, like, public access. I don't know, Jaime, if you know off the top of your head where it was airing in the United States, but I think it was kind of the same thing. It was not like front and center, like on a mainstream.
Well, I used to platform. Watch it on PBS Channel 17 out of Buffalo.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. So public broadcasting system. So, and it was always like, it was a Brit, you know, now we have BritBox, right? But
yeah.
But back then, British TV was hard to come by, right? So
yeah, but that's the nice thing is now, you know, they know they've kind of got this new audience. They've got people who are going to take a chance on it. And they brought in these two people who are like, yeah, we know how to do that. So hopefully it all comes around. And they've got, you know, this sort of underlying big mystery now, right? This, you know, what do they call him in the Maestro episode? He Who Is Coming or something? Talking about whatever the big bad is for the season.
A Maestro yes, when- so I know.
When Maestro is being like dragged into the piano, they say something about, you know, he's coming.
Right.
Very Gandalf in the Mines of Moria. You're coming.
Cool. All right. Let's move on to our watch list. So I guess I'm up first, right?
Go for it.
So I watched Unfrosted, which is the Jerry Seinfeld movie about the fictitious history of the breakfast Pop-Tart. It's got a ton of like A-list comedians, and it's funny. Like Amy Schumer plays the head of Post, and he plays the marketing guy at Kellogg. Jim Gaffigan plays the head of Kellogg's, right? And it's apparently they made this whole thing without getting permission from either Kellogg or Post to use their products and their names, and they figured they'd get sued later. But you know, he's been doing talk show appearances, which he hasn't done in a while, I guess, to promote this thing. In fact, he even showed up on Saturday Night Live as the person who's done too much press, right?
Yeah.
On the news. But, and definitely I highly recommend it. It's funny. I mean, it's funny but that said, really divided reviews. I read some of the reviews on some of the shows, some of the things I watch, Letterboxd, I think. Tons of 1-star and 2-star reviews. People either love it or hate it, but it'd be interesting to see what you guys think. But I thought it was really funny. Like, Melissa McCarthy's in it as sort of his sidekick, inventor person. So, yeah. So it's an interesting story about it makes you want Pop-Tarts is what it comes down to, right?
And that's why they won't get sued, because the Pop-Tart sales have gone through the roof.
Yeah, maybe. I wouldn't be surprised if that's the case, right? Yeah, but it's all about the breakfast cereal and like breakfast as a meal or whatever. But yeah, it's cool. It's interesting. I mean, definitely worth a watch on Netflix. I'd probably give it 3.5 stars if I had to give it out of 5, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm definitely going to watch that at some point. It looks, like you say, it's just every part is played by somebody. And I know that there's some really cool cameos and stuff like that. So that is enough to get me into it. But
I mean, like the title screen at the end where they introduce all, you didn't mention all the characters, and it goes on for a while, quite a while.
Yeah.
Because you know how there's usually the starring so-and-so, and then they have the featuring blah, 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 blah. And then at the end, they have the and for the big names, you know? Mm-hmm. The and goes on like for 4 or 5 pages.
Right? Yeah.
It's quite a few big name people in this one, surprisingly, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw that one too. And I think the backlash is probably because it's such a weird film, right? It's like, I can't figure out if people were playing it straight or hamming it up and kind of decided it was this weird superposition of both. And whichever sort of side you collapsed on is where you ended up. I ended up on the, wow, I did enjoy this. It was like a very long SNL sketch. And if you end up on the opposite side, I'd say, wow, I didn't like this. It's like a very long SNL sketch. There you go, right? Like, I think people are saying basically the same thing, and it really will depend on the person taking it in. It's kind of middle ground, and I think your rating is probably appropriate for that. That it's not a 1-star, it's not a 5-star, it's kind of in the middle somewhere. But I enjoyed it. You know, again, no more Paw Patrols for the future. So you got to do something while you're doing laundry and dishes, right?
Yeah, it's an easy watch. I didn't watch it all in one sitting, but it's a super easy watch, right? So
yeah. And I know that there's, you know, outside of the show, the movie itself, I know there was a little bit of pushback too. As you say, Jerry's been doing a lot of press and events and stuff like that. And he's been taking a bit of heat because of his ties to Israel. And so okay. There's been a little bit of backlash with younger viewers who are much more vocal about people who are... who have ties to Israel, given the state of affairs in the world right now. So I know that has been a bit of a backlash as well. So I think that might have been some of the reason for some of the negativity as well.
Yeah, that's a whole debate we don't want to get into. Nope, but
we'll just we'll leave it at that for this show. What else you got, Tim?
Yeah. So I also wanted to see. I mean, as you know, I'm a Planet of the Apes fan. There have been a few flops in the redo, in the remakes, Marky Mark, for example. Was it Marky Mark?
It was. Yeah, it was Marky Mark, yeah.
Yeah, in the Tim Burton redo, which was a little hard to take. But
yeah.
But then again, it was a Tim Burton movie. What do you expect, right? But, you know, this whole sort of anti-circus, you know, started off with James Franco and John Lithgow and Andy Serkis doing the origin story of Caesar, who's now grown, you know, went through 3 or 4 different iterations. You know, the last one was a little hard to take with the Woody Harrelson character.
Yeah, the War for the Planet of the Apes. Yeah,
the War for the Planet of the Apes. But this one's kind of a revisit of generally the original sort of. The original plot's not in it at all. But it's sort of reaching that point in the timeline. In fact, there is, even in the middle of it, there's a throwback to the original movie, including the staccatic piano playing that they, you know, single note piano playing that appears in that first movie. And you know, there's an iconography, I'm not going to spoil it for people, that is lifted right out of that original movie. Right. And it's interesting because, you know, it's kind of like the evolution of, they've gotten to the point now where, as a society or as societies, they've forgotten who Caesar really was and what his role was. So they know that, you know, they, in the name of Caesar, is the rationale for doing everything. You know, so say we all, kind of thing. Right. But they don't know why. They don't really, they've lost the sort of connection to who Caesar was, right. And what his role in where they are today, kind of thing. Right. But yeah, and so, but I wanted to see it in IMAX because, you know, to get the big screen experience. Unfortunately, the theater I went to, as I mentioned earlier, I normally would sit at the back row of a IMAX theater or up high. I bought my last couple of movies I've seen there. I've sat in row J, which is like the 10th row. And I'm beginning to think you need to sit almost not quite at the front, but near, closer to the front, to get that whole peripheral, you know, encompassing view of it, right? So... But yeah, it was a surprisingly good movie. I thought, like, you know, like it was right up there with, I enjoyed it as much as I would have enjoyed, not quite like an Avengers kind of thing, but better than most movies. You know, I would watch it again when it comes out on whatever streaming service it comes out on. I think it might be Disney, I guess, right? I'll watch it again. It definitely was a good movie. So I really enjoyed it. highly recommend it. If you're into the apes and you want to, you know, big bet. And it's funny because there's not a lot of suspend disbelief either. Like this, like the things that happen in it are pretty kind of cool. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. And some good portrayals. William H. Macy plays a human, and there's a young lady who plays a human, and they're really good in it. So, And then the big bad, actually, the big bad is an actor from Thunder Bay, Ontario, Canada's own. And as soon as I say his name, you'll know who I mean, but he's like one of those, that guy.
Warren Green?
Lauren Green? Isn't he one from Winnipeg or something?
Yeah, I can't remember which city Lauren is from, but...
So Owen Teague plays Noah. I don't know who that is. Kevin Durant plays the big Proxima Caesar.
Huh.
Yeah, and I don't know who Peter McCon, but he plays the big angry general ape dude, right? So yeah, it's really well done. I mean, I highly recommend it. Good story. I mean, like better than any Avatar I've seen. You know, so
Lauren Green, born in Ottawa.
Ottawa. Okay, well, not quite the same place, right?
Okay, my pick for this week is Dark Matter. Not to be confused with the other Dark Matter, this is a new Dark Matter that is a different matter than mm-hmm. that matter. Mm-hmm. So Dark Matter...
So it hasn't been canceled yet? That's the
important part. Well, it's an Apple TV Plus show, so hopefully it's got a little bankroll behind it. But so this is a weird one because there's a famous show on... When was that? It was like 10 years ago, Tim, it started, called Dark Matter. That was a series that people watched. As Tim mentioned, it was canceled. People were ticked off about that one. It did have a cult audience. For some reason, even though I get this is named after a novel that came out in 2016, they decided to keep it named Dark Matter. It is just as confusing. If you try and search Dark Matter, you may need to be specific and say Dark Matter 2024 TV show Apple TV Plus. But this series started a couple weeks ago on Apple TV Plus. It is somewhere between science fiction, thriller, mystery. It stars Joel Edgerton. I don't get that one right. Joel Edgerton and Jennifer Connelly and Alice Braga. The basic premise is that there's a guy, he's kind of a little bit like the character in Breaking Bad. He's, you know, he's made some choices, he's made some sacrifices, he's a teacher, he's not really loving his life, but he likes his life, he's happy, he's got a lovely wife and a son, and things are okay. Well, you know, some of the people that he was, you know, in school with have gone on to great successful things. One night when he's on his way home, he gets kidnapped by a mysterious person in a mask, and he is basically, you know, taken prisoner into this place. He gets knocked out, and when he wakes up, everything seems to have changed. He doesn't know, like, his house is changed, even though he still lives there. His wife isn't there. His kid is gone. The furniture's all changed. He doesn't know what's going on. He goes to school, and nobody there recognizes him. He goes to his local bar. Nobody knows who he is. And so his whole world gets turned upside down. It's a really good sort of, like, what the heck happened? And, within the first episode, we sort of realize that what's happened is basically he's been taken out of his world and taken to a different multiverse place where that's not his world. And the other person has switched places with him. And okay. So the series basically is following these two versions of this character, Jason, played by Joel Edgerton, who is... trying to figure, well, the one Jason is trying to figure out how to get back to his world, while the other Jason is basically infiltrating his world and trying to sort of take over his life and do that. Jennifer Connelly plays his wife in the, we'll call it regular world, and then plays somebody that he knows in the other world. And it's, again, very science-y, very sort of science fiction-y, very mystery-y. So there are four episodes in now. I think it's a 9-episode series or 8-episode series. But it's great. It's really enjoyable. Jennifer Connelly's still really, really great. I come and go on Joel Edgerton. I find sometimes I really enjoy his work and sometimes I'm like, it's a little boring. But he was really good. people who are like, who the heck is that? That's the guy who played Uncle Owen, the young Uncle Owen in the Star Wars prequels. He was in one of the Terminator movies, I want to say. Yeah, he's kind of been in a bunch of stuff. You know him if you see him, but you're not like, I know that guy. I love that guy. You're like, I know that guy. I don't know where I know him from. Yeah, it's a really interesting premise, and the execution is good. It's pretty dark, so I wouldn't say this is for everyone. Like, if you don't mind your sci-fi with a little bit of...
Well, it's right in the title, Dark Matter.
It's true, you know? It's true. If you don't mind your science fiction with a bit of a dark edge, you know, people die, and not in pleasant ways, it can be a little grim. But it's an interesting mystery, and just, you know, watching these sort of parallel stories and I mean, we've been inundated with multiversal kind of stories over the last 10 years. This one is one that is kind of an interesting take on it, because it's that whole, you know, what if the choices you made, even if they seem mundane, are what somebody else covets, is an interesting premise. So, yeah, I'm about halfway through, and I would say it's a really interesting watch. It's Disney Plus, it's Disney Plus, it's Apple TV Plus. So it's got really good production value. It's got like really good high quality acting. It looks great. And yeah, well worth a watch. Recommend.
So before I get just a bit of fact check on the ape movie, the Peter Malcolm plays the orangutan advisor in that one. Mm. One of the good guys. And Eka Darville plays the evil general dude, right? Whatever. I did start watching Dark Matter, and then I realized I had to watch, I had to finish up Succession or something like that, or just I had too much work to do in the last couple of weeks. But I have it queued up. I've watched like a second of it, so my Apple TV thinks I want to continue watching it, so I will definitely get into that one for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, we've talked about Apple TV Plus is kind of positioning itself as a great place for prestige sci-fi, and this continues the streak, yeah. You know, off the edge of you know, Foundation and Silo and some of the other stuff that they put out. It's really good.
And you did remind me, sorry, before Jaime jumps in. I also have been watching episodes of Shogun, which, of course, as you know, a lot of it's in Japanese, so there's a lot of reading involved, right? Which is not my favorite thing, but because I have to, like, if I listen to them speak in Japanese, but I'm not looking at the words, I'm like, oh, and then I go, but I want to go back and figure out what they said, right? Yeah. So keep having to hit the rewind button on the thing. But the episode I just watched, which I think is the third or fourth episode, you reminded me of it when you talked about the grim deaths, because it's almost like, for a Disney show, which was surprising, it's almost like, not quite as bad as Three Body Problem, but pretty bad.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, almost like, you know, Invincible, kind of like death and destruction and yeah, not for the faint of heart.
Well, I remember the original miniseries, the one with Richard Chamberlain from the 80s. I remember because I was probably all of like 7, 8 years old when I watched it, back in the era when like you just watched whatever was on the TV that your parents were watching. I remember a very memorable seppuku scene where like somebody takes the sword out and just like runs themselves through out of shame. And I remember at the time being like, holy moly, that is some dark stuff. As a kid, I was like, that guy just stabbed himself with a sword.
Well, so far they've been doing the Quentin Tarantino thing where you see somebody swinging the sword and you hear the sound, but you don't get to see the actual decapitation or whatever. But in this last one, you know, somebody fires a cannon at a guy on a horse. That's ooh, what I want to say. Ooh. Yeah.
Yeah, Shogun's been on my watch list. I have it saved on Disney Plus. It's on the to-do list too, but I wanted to get through a couple things, and I thought, you know what, I want to watch something else that I can bring to the show. So when I saw Dark Matter, I was like, oh, let's give that a look before we
get which too reminds far. Me, John Hamm's Fetch is leaving Netflix, apparently. Have you watched it yet?
Oh, Fletch? Yeah, I saw it when it came out. I you know me, I'm a big Gregory MacDonald, the author. I have all his books. So, yeah, I really liked, I thought he was a great Fletch. I think he was much more true to the book character than Chevy Chase ever was. So, cool. I wish they'd do more.
Over to you.
Yes. So, welcome to Wrexham. Season 3 is here. They're like a few episodes in, but that's okay. You know, it's more about the journey than it is about getting to some particular end. So I don't have a ton to add here other than, you know, if you enjoyed the first couple of seasons of watching Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds, you know, put together a whole ownership of Wrexham AFC, the soccer or football club, if you prefer. Mm-hmm. It's fun. It's actually kind of interesting to see the behind the scenes of all of the stuff that goes on beyond just the actual games themselves. And it's really not about the games per se, for folks who might be wondering. They will cover some games, but it's really more about what does the impact of the game. Oh, this person got injured. This person isn't performing well. We're going to have to cut them. But we, you know, we got to see their spouse and their kids. And, well, it sucks to be you. It's a business. We have to win. And, you know, that sort of thing. It's more about the drama around everything than it is about the sport itself, per se. The city of a town, village, I forget what they are. The people of Wrexham are a big part of the show as well. I think worth a watch if people haven't seen it.
Yeah, and to follow up on that, I just watched I mentioned earlier, the Ryan Reynolds episode with David Letterman, which was good because he covers some of the Wrexham stuff as well as backstory. Cool. Well, I guess that's it for another week. So, hey, Jonathan, people are in touch with you. Where would they find you?
You can find me on the Twitter, and the Instagram is @GPKNews, or on YouTube at youtube.com/@JPK.
And Jaime, if people are in touch with you, where would they find you?
I'm on Twitter as @DevOfTheHair.
All right. And my name is Timitra, T-I-M-M-I-T-R-A, on the Threads machine, the Mastodon machine, what are they calling it this week? X? Twitter? Whatever. So until next time, we'll see you in the future.
Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to the Spotcast Podcast. If you want to find out more about the podcast or see the episode show notes, visit the Spotcast website at spotcast.com. You can get in touch with us on the website or follow us on Twitter at Spotcast. If you have feedback or questions, send us a tweet with the hashtag AskSpotcast. If you like the show, please consider recommending us to a friend, writing a review on iTunes, or pledging any amount at patreon.com/spotcast. You can find details on how to help us on our website, spotcast.com/sponsor us. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you in the future.
See Furiosa. I didn't get a follow-up from Xavier.
Yeah, I think we were trying to figure out. So what was the date you suggested? You said sometime next week, right?
Friday. I kept saying the wrong date.
Tim.
31st, I guess.
Yeah, you said the next Friday.
Yeah. Actually, I'm available on the 30th if he hasn't already bought it. Because I'm normally teaching on Monday and Thursday for the next couple of weeks. Doing a Vision OS boot camp.
Well, next Thursday would be the final episode of Star Trek Discovery.
True, so and Spotcast. Yeah, there's a little podcast.
Want to do that instead of going and seeing Furiosa? But
that's true.
Yeah, okay.
Good point.
Yeah,
that's a good point.
But all yes, right. I will. I will chase the boy. We've been. He's back working again, and
oh, is he?
Yeah, he's back at the Home Depot for the summer. So, he's doing that, then when he's not doing that, he and a little bit of I are working on finishing up that basement project. So we're trying to get through that.
Still going through that. All right.
Yeah, I'm hoping we can get it done before puppy number two shows up. So,
When does puppy number two show up?
It'll be the week of the 9th, so 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks.
So Carol says you've made your match already. Have you made your match?
Well, we went last weekend, and they had all the puppies out in the yard. They brought all the boys out, so we decided we want a boy. They brought the four boys out and let us sort of play with them, and they each had different colored little collars on so that we could sort of say if there's one that we sort of found a fancy in. But in the end, like, they're black labs. They're identical. They're virtually the same size. They look the same. They have all the same attitude, whatever. We've met the mom and the dad. They're both real sweetheart dogs. So, we kind of liked one of them a little bit, but it's probably just that it was the most awake. So we, you know, I think Sherry sent a note back basically saying like, we kind of liked this one, but this is the kind of temperament we're looking for, to sort of go along with the dog and the family that we have and whatever you think is best. So essentially what they do is during these last couple of weeks, as they're getting bigger, she said she literally does stuff like she'll drop a garbage can lid, she'll drop a pot, she'll just sort of see how they react, if they're skittish, if they're, you know, if they're bothered by that kind of stuff. She'll do just like little things to sort of test their temperament, and yeah, sort of try and find the best match. I mean, that's what we did with Kirby, although with Kirby it was only two dogs to choose from because there was only two that survived that litter. Yeah, but there was only three born, and then one of them unfortunately died when it was a pup. So there was only two, and it was two boys, and we met them both and we played with them both, and they were both very similar. And they sort of said, well, what do you want? And we said, well, we got two very high energy children, so like maybe something that's not super high energy. And yeah, when we went there, they literally were just like, we've picked this one for you. We think this is the best fit. And I mean, we had him for 10 plus years and he was, yeah, perfect for that. So,
yeah.
So
that explains mine, because I mean, mine was the last puppy.
Well, you never know,
and,
right?
And, you know, she freaks out when, like, if I surprise her or whatever, she just starts, you know, she sounds like Dino from the Flintstone.
And some of that is temperament. Some of it is environment. Some of it is, you know, it's the breed.
I'm sure she's learned that from Mac, too, because Mac yells at just clouds and sky and stuff, right?
Yeah, so. I mean, it's funny. We actually took Sin down to the park again today. We've been taking her pretty regularly down to the big dog park down here in South Mississauga. And since Kirby died 5 months ago, she's just changed completely. When she was down there before, she was very close to us. She was very wary of other people. She was really protective of Kirby. And then when we started taking her by herself, she's just come more and more and more out of her shell. And like today, like, strange people were coming up and like, hey, can I pet your dog? And we're like, well, you can try. And she was fine with it. And she was playing with the other dogs. And she just, every week she seems to get more and more comfortable. And we're like, okay, we really hope that between her and the puppy that they can kind of keep this vibe going. Cause she's really kind of mellowed out a little bit since she was stopped being so protective. And I'm a little worried that she's going to be like, this is my baby and you can't touch it. And she's going to be back to being high strung again. So
right.
We'll see. But yeah, she's in for a surprise. She's definitely gotten comfortable in the past few months being the only dog in the house. I don't know how she's going to take to being having a junior playmate again. Although she's
okay with
she likes Sorcha. She likes her a lot. But then she also, like, we've seen every time you guys have brought her over, by the time, you know, they've been together for, you know, 4 or 5 hours, like,
enough already.
She's like, get away from me, I want to bite you in the face. So, you know, I imagine she'll be something like that with the puppy too for the first little while. Be, you know, when does it go home? And then eventually she'll realize it's not going home, and hopefully it just settles in. But
Well, I mean, Sorcha kind of picks on Mac, right? Like, I guess, like Sintra used to do with
Kirby,
right?
Yeah, she used to just...
Could nip at him.
Yeah, she used to want to try and get him going. But then, again, for both the older dogs, it's not a bad thing. They need to get off their asses and go do stuff, so that's not the worst thing in the world. But yeah, it's exciting.
Well, we were at the park today, and I called Mac, and Mac will do, like, he'll start running towards you, and he'll go, well, what am I running for?
I think all of us can appreciate that now as we get further and further away from our youth.
Like, okay, maybe I'll just walk quickly.
Yeah, maybe I don't need to actually run over there. Maybe I could just do like a soft trot. How about that?
Yeah.
How old is Pollo now, Jaime?
He is 11.
11, wow. They live a long time, don't they, Chihuahuas?
I think it's like the 15-ish years, like they can last maybe close to 20, but I don't think 20 is usual for them.
Yeah. I mean, I've basically heard the adage that, you know, little dogs live longer, well, bigger the dog, like shorter the lifespan, right? I know people have had like Great Danes and stuff. They only live like 8-9 years. I was a little disappointed. I mean, again, I obviously loved Kirby with all my heart, but I was just kind of a little disappointed. He didn't make it quite 11 years. I was like, 12, 13, you know, but
how old was Priscilla? Priscilla was like 17 or
she
something.
Lived a long life too, but again, she was a little smaller. She wasn't like a lab sized or anything either, so But yeah, I mean, we see sometimes
we'll high
see,
strung though.
We'll see yeah. dogs in the park because there's basically two dog parks side by side down in South Mississauga. There's one that's like this huge walking trail with open fields and stuff like that. And there's one that's like this smaller penned in area for the puppies and smaller dogs and stuff like that. And Sin is just kind of right on the cusp of what's okay to be in there. So we've gone in there a few times because she's only 34 pounds. And yeah, we'll see some dogs in there and be like, how old is your dog? Like, it looks really old. And they're like, oh, you know, 17, but still spry. I'm like, okay. Like, sure.
Yeah.
You know, you see a 17-year-old lab and they, you know, like carrying it around in a wagon. Yep. All right. Well, I will talk to the kid about the Furiosa stuff. Jaime, are you going to go see Furiosa in the theater?
Not sure. It's a good question. It seems like it's doing pretty good in the review so far.
I saw a couple things, you know, a few people sort of say, well, it's, you know, it's not quite as, you know, great as Fury Road, but it's still pretty cool. And it's, you know, it's nothing more than you kind of expect it to be, which is just like an origin story. I'm like, yeah, but an origin story with like George Miller's visuals and, you know, truck races and craziness, like that sounds awesome. So I'm pretty sure
it's out already.
I believe today is the day it drops.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So,
right. Okay. Yeah. So it's opening this weekend, in other words.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, yeah, like tonight's the night.
Cool.
So, yeah. We'll get there.
Yeah. There's another reason why I wanted to see the King of Apes before it went away from IMAX.
Yeah. I think tonight, actually, yesterday was the last day you could see it in IMAX.
Okay. I think, yeah.
Furiosa takes over.
Yeah.
Yep.
Cool.
Yeah.
Alrighty.
All right.
I guess I better go, I don't know, watch an episode of Dark Matter.
I recommend. It's good stuff.
Or Shogun or
yeah.
Edit a podcast. I don't know.
Yeah.
Not sure.
One of those things. Maybe two.
Maybe two. All right. Maybe I'll edit two podcasts this week. Ooh. Who knows? Maybe like a 1-2 punch kind of thing.
There you
right?
go.
Maybe. You gotta be careful though, because you know, people will, like, the way it works is people will listen to the latest episode first, right? So
it's true. You got to make sure you drop them in the right order.
Yeah. So hopefully, and I don't know if how many people make it to the after show here, but you know, make sure you listen to this one second.
Yes, that please.
All right.
All right. Talk to you next week, guys.
Talk to you later.
Okay, bye.
Yeah, bye. Bye.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.